Hey, Ellen Rohr here. Hey, my last trip before the coronavirus shutdown included a trip to Chicago, where we kicked off a podcast series with several industry leaders. Now, since then, it's like the world shifted and every conversation is now filtered through the lens of the COVID-19 experience and response. So I thought, are these conversations relevant? And I listened to them. If you, like me, are experiencing a little COVID-19 fatigue, you've come to the right place for this podcast series. Because the people I visit with, we engage in awesome conversations that are thoughtful and vulnerable. And these industry leaders share what's important now and forever, real true north lessons for starting, fixing, and growing an awesome business and creating a life of your dreams. So I think, yes, now more than ever, it's time to get back to what matters no matter what. And these conversations, I suspect, are going to inspire you. Enjoy. Welcome to PHCP Pros Behind the Wall podcast. I'm Ellen Rohr, plumber's wife, industry icon, and COO of Zoom Drain Franchising Company. With this podcast, our intention is to have real, thought-provoking conversations with people from across the PHCP industry. Of course, we want to entertain and encourage. Mostly, we want to connect and allow our guests to be vulnerable, to explore insights gained and lessons learned. Let's go behind the wall. My guest today is Pamela Baylin, owner of Man in Sewers and Zoom Drain Chicago. She is super accomplished. By education, she's a banker and a financier. She's an attorney, a contractor, my franchise partner, and best of all, my friend. She's not just smart. She's kind and loving and devoted to her family. Oh, and her team. They love her. Talk about culture. Pamela inspires me. She's someone who makes you want to be and do better. I'm excited to share her journey and this conversation with you. Hey, it's Ellen Rohr. I'm here with my friend and co-worker, associate, and best friend forever, Pamela Baylin. Pamela, I'm so happy that you're here on Behind the Walls podcast.
Well, thank you for having me today.
I met you at the Wet Show once upon a time.
Yes.
And I was magnetized towards you. We were at a Women in the Industry event, and I just loved your presence and your confidence. And I told you, I'm going to do an article about you. A year later, I still had not done that. And so I had to apologize and say, I mean it. And we ran an article in PHC News not that long ago. And that's where I got to know you a little better. And I'm so happy that you're part of the Zoom Drain family now, too.
Yes. A lot has happened in that intervening time.
Yes. And Women in the Industries, ironically, the name of your company is also
Men in Sewers.
Men in Sewers. Why not? So I, you know, the purpose of this podcast is to get behind the walls, to have vulnerable conversations. Talk to me about a little bit about how you grew up. Was there a characteristic or two that you got from your parents that you realize now that, I think my mom had that kind of influence on me, or my dad was responsible for that drive in me?
A lot of yes. And my a heavy dose of my grandparents, too. So I grew up in Detroit, but very Southern. You know, my grandparents moved up from the South during the Great Migration. And, you know, my parents, aunts and uncles and stuff were all born in the Midwest, but very Southern values growing up at home. I did a lot of things that I thought were normal, but people were like, you did what over the weekend?
Tell me more. Like, what do you consider a Southern value?
Oh, well, we still grew our own food, even in the middle of the city, in the middle of Detroit. My grandmas, both of them, had like extensive gardens in the back. And they're like, okay, well, it's time to go make dinner. Go outside and get me some green beans. I thought everybody did that. I didn't realize. You know, not everybody does that.
So what else about your upbringing do you realize now you're maybe reliving or continuing on as far as your family or your business goes?
Well, definitely in terms of the family, you know, my parents all, you know, sort of rotating cast of characters in my house every 6 weeks. my kids have a very close relationship with their grandparents, just like I did with mine. You know, looking back on it, me and my grandmas, we were like Thelma and Louise without the car crash in the end, you know?
I love that.
We got into a lot of trouble.
So you had the opportunity to grow up with multi-generations, mm-hmm. and now you can do that for your kids too.
Right.
Because you have two.
Yep.
Excellent. And Stephen, your husband.
Yes.
Yay. Tell me, how has your family shaped your business? You know, being a mother, being a family member, how does that play into what you bring to work every day?
So sometimes my guys tease me. And one of them really did slip up once. And I showed up to a job. I had lunch. They needed extra gloves. So I had extra gloves, you know, just dropping stuff off that they need. I didn't think twice about it. And he's like, "Thanks, Mom." And I'm like, "What?"
I so feel motherly at right. work a lot.
Yes.
And I'm one of the oldest ones, if not the oldest one usually.
And these guys are young. They really could be my kids. And it's so funny because the property manager heard that and to this day swears up and down that the pumper truck driver is my actual son.
Well, it is, you know, it's not lost on me that sometimes the most functional family that our team members have is coming to work,
yes.
is the back of the truck, mm-hmm. is hanging out in the parking lot before the day gets started. And you look out and see how they interact and you think, this is family.
Yep. And we spend enough time together.
Yes, that's true. And we look out for each other that way, I think, too. So there are moments in life that kind of steer the direction of your life. Like, for instance, when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actress. If you can see, I love being in front of the camera. I did not have any idea that I would end up in this industry.
Right.
So when you were a kid, what were some clues that that gave you an idea of what you wanted to do, you know, as you got older? And then how did you find this path?
So my dream growing up was... not this, uh-huh. but I really, really wanted to be a banker more than anything in the world.
Why? Scrooge McDuck?
No. No, that's the opposite of banker. Growing up in, in a wealthy suburb of Detroit, surrounded by all the automakers' kids, you know, just... You know, you kind of get introduced to that business world, and the aspect of business at that time that drew me in was finance, because the one thing that the automakers struggled with always was finance, you know, and their stock price, and, you know, hearing what, you know, some of the parents complained about when they were milling around on pair at night was banking related issues. So that just kind of drew me there.
And so then what happened?
And so then I... Went off to college, majored in finance, and got my newly minted degree in finance and went to work for a bank. So I was on the path. And just getting to see the ins and outs of how a bank really worked, going through that banking management training program, it wasn't all I thought it was going to be.
I just watched your eyes like roll back like this. The bringing back this memory is not necessarily like a life you loved living.
No. Not for the reasons people are probably thinking. Working in the bank was great. I love my customers. But the inner workings of some banks, you can see the effects of discrimination and redlining. And it just kind of bursts your bubble after a while, knowing that, you know, these are basic things that people struggle with. And I just couldn't do it anymore.
And the bank wasn't helping.
No.
So what was a pivotal moment? What made you say no more? What gave you a different direction?
I knew I wanted more control over my career because at that time I was an assistant manager of a bank, and it was a tough branch. But just because we were in a very wealthy community, high touch, high dollar, it was the second or third largest branch in the system at the bank that I worked at that time. And, you know, the manager and I had a really good chemistry. We kept the wheels on the bus. We were growing deposits. We were doing everything that we should have been doing. And then I applied for a promotion and I got turned down because I was too good at my job. They did not want me to leave that branch because they knew nobody else could do it. and straddle the high touch versus you're also straddling the hood. So I could talk to both worlds, and they did not want me out of that seat. I got turned down for promotion 11 times.
So you knew that you weren't going to go anywhere.
Yep.
That and must not,
and not because I wasn't good enough, not because they didn't value me as an employee, but they just didn't know how to replace me. And that's when you talk about Zoom drain, you're bringing people up, you're having people train others so someone else can move into that seat. And that just wasn't the bank's philosophy at that time. They needed me in that seat. They needed me to keep doing that job so that bank, that branch could perform.
I've seen that over and over in business, that someone becomes so valuable that we really just limit them in their career and where they could go. And it is heartbreaking. So, not maybe a little known fact is then somehow you became a lawyer. When did this happen?
She's
multifaceted, kids.
I quit the bank and went into mortgage banking, thinking that would be better, but not really, because that's even more of a stark in your face. Here's how discrimination has affected the community that you serve. And I spent a lot of time on the phone with lawyers because, unfortunately, you know, we didn't always sell the mortgages that we made at the credit union. We booked them and they would go bad. So you have to foreclose on people's houses and blah, blah, blah. So I spent a lot of time talking to lawyers on the phone, and they gave me stellar legal advice, but terrible advice for keeping a customer. So I'm like, I can do it better. And so in my young naivete, arrogance, I quit my job and went to law school because I'm like, literally, I can do it better. And that's how I ended up going back to law school.
Okay, so how did your law career, So how did you end up at Men and Sewers? So there's still some journey to discover.
There's a little more. So I went to law school, fell in love with tax, went to one of the big accounting.
You are such a nerd.
I am.
Fell in love with tax. You should see the glow happening right there.
I am a nerd, and
fell in
love with tax. My inner nerd. So fell in love with it. So I went doing tax structuring for large multinational mergers and acquisitions and loved that. But then Enron.
Okay. What happened? How did that affect you?
So it's tough to be an attorney at an accounting firm with varying ethics. You know, accountants have one standard, attorneys have another. And Enron just kind of brought that to a head. And I just didn't feel comfortable at an accounting firm anymore.
Were you directly involved with Enron, or were you seeing this in the bigger picture?
I was seeing it more in the bigger picture, knowing what could come down the pike.
Recognizing what was happening?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so then I went into private practice as a corporate attorney. Practiced corporate law for more years than I care to admit.
You are not that old. I don't know how you packed all of this in there. All right. So tell me about your clients then.
So my clients were those distributors, manufacturers, janitorial services companies, all those blue collar trades. And my grandparents, you know, were in those blue collar trades. I grew up in that. I know what that's like, you know, to have to help your granddad unpack his lunch pail at the end of every day and ice his knees or, you know, do whatever because of a hard day's work. Mm-hmm. And then get up and do it again the next day.
Somebody told me that there's a difference between people who shower at the end of the day and people who shower in the morning. Isn't that an interesting perspective?
It is.
Yeah, like, because you got to shower at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. in our world.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but you were not unfamiliar with that. Now, these are your clients, and you're recognizing mm-hmm. some of the values and perspectives that your family had.
Yep. It wasn't sexy, but they did it every day. And the one in particular, janitorial services firm, he had tried to sell, wanted $25 million for his company, which was the offering price at the time.
Now, in our industry already, $25 million is a huge sum.
It is a huge
sum. It's a huge sum when you consider how many one-man bands, you know, in home service and contracting in general, how many one-man bands there are, 2 to 3 truck outfits there are. $25 million is a large sum as it is.
Right.
So what happened then?
So, and he'd been a client for a while, and just ignoring the little stuff that, you know, as business owners, we don't always get a chance to get to because we don't understand its importance in the grand scheme of things, like trademark your tagline that you've been using for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You're a top salesperson. Get him on an employment agreement so he doesn't walk out the door and take that book of business with him. So those little things, you know, we took the time to sit down, help him identify, resolve, you know, and his books were a mess.
His accounting.
Yes.
Okay.
So getting somebody in place that can help him clean up and like, you should have written this off 30 years ago. What are you doing? Why is that still in the books? So just helping with those little things that we just ignore because
that is not business as usual for an attorney.
No, it is not.
So you, where did you just felt like compelled to help?
He trusted me. You know, I one of the handful of people that, you know, could tell him no. So just, you know, so I just did it. It wasn't in my job description, but you just did it. And finally put it back on the market and got an offer. And he ended up selling for $78
million. $78
million. $78
million. So how did that impact you? Like, what did that make you think? What happened after that?
I literally just kind of went home and sat in a chair. I'm like, why am I not doing this for myself again? Because clearly, you know, he didn't graduate high school, but he knew how to push a mob and he grew an empire. I have a degree in finance and a law degree and just helped him fix it to the point where he could sell for that amount of money. Why am I not doing this?
He helped to make $50 million more than he was going to make.
Right.
Very cool. So that sparked in you, maybe yes. I can do this.
Mm-hmm. And that really, it sparked the research project. What?
You don't seem like someone who would make a rash decision.
No.
Okay.
I'm
so
a planner.
Okay, you're a planner. Okay.
Carry I'm a planner on. Married to a planner.
Yes. You probably have something on your fridge that the family knows what they're doing this weekend.
It's an outlook, but yes.
Okay, excellent. All right, so you start some research. What does that look like?
And so I knew that the next wave of spending in this country would be on infrastructure because this country's falling down around our ears. The highways, the expressways, the bridges, all of it. So I started looking for a company that could touch that sector.
That is such an unusual path to this industry.
It is.
You know, just having talked to people for the last 35 years, so many of them got into it like me. They married into it or they were born into it. And while you had that connection from your family, that definitely wasn't the path you were taking.
Well, and that wasn't the lesson from my grandparents or parents. My grandparents, all about education, because they did not have the opportunity to partake of that. And so literally they pushed it down to their kids. You know, my parents are both first generation college and my dad's a doctor. My mom's got a master's degree in math and she, you know, taught math for a long, long time. And everybody just pushed education.
A professional degree.
Right. Pushed education, get your professional degree, go to college, do better than us. And we all did. Nobody went to blue collar trades. None of us.
As you're doing this research, how did your family react to?
I just didn't tell them.
Perfect.
Yeah. Sometimes
it's you're better a big to ask
for you don't forgiveness have to, permission.
You don't have to tell.
Yeah. When I told my dad that I had purchased men in sewers, he's like, "Oh, that's nice for now."
Oh, that's nice for now. Thought maybe you had an itch to scratch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and just thought that this would be some fleeting fancy. And I'm like.
Did you have moments of doubt? Did you
every day?
Okay. All right.
But you still do it.
So like, and you probably didn't get a lot of support from your colleagues. Or am I wrong?
No. They it's like literally, I can almost visually imagine them petting me on the head saying, "Oh, that's nice."
That's irritating.
Extremely. But it's a threefold problem. You're giving up a professional career. No one does that. You're going into a blue collar trade. You're a minority and a woman. Oh my God, no.
Good luck.
Right, exactly.
So were there signs that you got validated or were there moments where you thought, I am so on the right track? Tell me about one of those.
There's no sky open up, harp music.
Blue light.
Yeah. Nothing like that. It's just... 4 years later, I'm still here and expanding. So to me, that's the validation that, we kept the wheels on the bus, we professionalized operations, and we're still here and we're at it every day.
Now, was your husband supportive? Was your family supportive of this move?
Steve was very supportive.
Right out of the gate.
Right. Because he knew, we had this discussion, the late nights, kids are asleep, we're sitting there talking about what we're going to do next, because he's kind of in the same boat. Works for a big company and just wanted something different. So that's what we're working for.
And so he still works in the corporate world.
Yes.
And is your partner, and a fairly silent partner, although I've met him, he's not a silent guy.
No.
He's a quiet guy.
He's quiet.
Yeah, but I don't imagine he's a silent guy. No, you seem to have really complementary skill sets to work together. So what was a surprise, going to work in the business and showing up? There was probably some transition before you were introduced as the new owner.
Yes.
Can you share that?
So, we bought the company in March, and then I literally spent every day of 3+ months with the previous owner at her side.
Oh, that's right. It was a woman-owned company.
It was a woman-owned company.
Interesting.
And just learning the business from the ground up. And then I spent the next 3 months as a tech with the guys, because I was not going to ask them to do anything I wasn't willing to do. So I've jetted, I've rotted, I've been in a basin because somebody dropped something down there and I was the smallest person to go get it.
Wow. So what effect did that have on the guys?
They respected that, because they knew I was never going to put them in danger or just take them for granted at what they did, because I did it too. And that was important for me to convey to them that, it's a new sheriff in town.
And you operate in Chicago. So as you take over, did you run into those prejudices, those things that you saw in your other world? How did that feel being in a new role now in business?
It's just new set of assumptions, new set of prejudices, especially now. A lot of times I'll show up on a job to, check on the guys, see how it's going. And they're like, oh, well, I want to talk to your boss. And I'm like, I am the boss. And they're like, well, no, I want to talk to somebody in the office. I'm like, well, I just happen to be here today, but I am in the office and I am the boss. And then they're like, well, I want to talk to your field supervisor, because they always assume that he is the owner. I'm like, no, it's still me. It's like,
well, how do your guys respond to that now? Because they must be right there when these conversations are going.
So they've gotten to the point where they just kind of snicker and they're like, well, I'm gonna call the office. I'm like, okay, go ahead, call the office. And then the phone starts ringing in my pocket. Like, still me. Do you want to talk to me on the phone, or can we have this conversation right here?
Still me. Yeah. I'm still right here.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So, and there've been the scary moments where, one particular facilities manager was unhappy with something, and I'm trying to walk him through the process, and it's like, yeah, sometimes this happens. We have backups, but we're here. We're going to clean it up. We won't leave it like that. And he's like, well, I want to talk to your boss. And I'm like, well, I am the owner. And it's like, no, you're not. I'm like, okay. And he just wanted to intimidate me with his size. He's a big dude. He's like 6'2", 250. So I don't know what came over me that day, but I got on a chair, because he was trying to get in my face. So I got on a chair so I could be taller and got right back in his face.
And let me just bring this chair right here.
Right. And if you know me, that is so unlike me. I mean, I know I'm a lawyer, but I'm not a litigator. There's a difference. I don't like confrontation. I'd rather just analyze your tax return and tell you what to do to get a better refund. And so I did that. And he was just shocked that I wasn't backing down from him. Like, in his mind, this tiny woman is not going to take my BS. And since that day, he has been my biggest advocate.
How did that make you feel?
Good. I realize now that he was probably just testing me to see if I could put up with, big, crazy dudes.
Yeah.
But.
And you still do work for him?
I still do work for him.
That's so cool. So what do your kids think of mom and her career? What kind of impact does that have on them?
So it has made my daughter realize that she wants no parts of this business, and she's going into hospital administration.
Is it too gross? Is that what does it? What is the part that she doesn't like?
You know what freaked her out? So the guys were driving to a job. Somebody ran a light and T-boned the van. And so one of my guys is calling me and he's just yelling into the phone, hair on fire, like trying to tell me what happened. But he's doing it in Spanish because he was so just freaked out. And so I'm talking to him. I can kind of understand what he's saying. And I'm like, just tell me where you are. Just tell me where you are. And he told me. And Hannah was my intern that summer. So I'm like, Hannah, grab your stuff. We're out. And she's like, what just happened? She was so terrified. She had no idea what happened. Is anybody hurt? Blah, blah, blah. And so they weren't far from the office. So we get there and they're fine. And the guy didn't have a license, drunk driving. He's getting arrested. And I'm just triaging the situation. I didn't think twice about it. I'm like, all right, take everything out of the van, get it in my car. We'll call a tow truck, blah, blah, blah. We're handling it. So we get back, Hannah and I get back to the office and she's like, I never want to go through that again. I can't do what you do. I'm like, yes, you can. Cause that's a mom thing. That is not even about
being
a good supervisor. That's just mom.
That's so true. That is really just like the mama bear coming up in this situation. Let's make sure everybody's safe and let's come with me. Wow. But that she just like,
she's like, no, you got that. I'm out.
You know, it's interesting with our son, Max, the entrepreneurial spirit is strong with both me and Hot Rod. I think at some point too, you just become unhirable. Like you've been doing your own thing for so long that like sometimes it gets a little tricky. Now I say that Hot Rod has a job, but they appreciate his independence and that really makes a difference. But Max's experience of like Hot Rod having to go out every Christmas, you know, just having to cut it short, always having the phone, like he just did not want to do that or doesn't yet. I wonder if that entrepreneurial spirit isn't latent in him at some point, because you live long enough, you try all kinds of things. But, you know, there's a big part of it that he thought, why would I want to do that?
Right. Right. And, you know, I come at it from a different perspective. I don't say I wouldn't ever say I had the entrepreneurial spirit, because from your son's perspective, I didn't want to do that either. Watching my dad, he's a gastroenterologist. He was always on call. I don't remember a Christmas where he was there when I got up. Somebody was always in the hospital. There was always some emergency and he just wasn't there. So when I got older and started to drive, then I would pick him up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to spend Christmas morning with him. And then we'd go on rounds to the hospital for everybody he had to leave in the hospital that he couldn't let go.
So that experience isn't just an entrepreneurial family experience.
I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be that person. So that's why I wanted a job. That's why I thought that was better.
So what management or leadership strategy or tactic have you discovered that's helped you in this role? Has there been a voice? Was there a book? Was there a seminar? Was there a mentor who helped give you some framework for being an entrepreneur? Now you're going to make me cry. This is the second time already today. What made you say that? Look, the two of us are crying.
I know. This is terrible. Because you saw me. Not everybody sees me. I mean, I'm always around. I'm always available. But not everybody sees me.
I can so connect with that. You know, I've been a troublemaker most of my life. However, the few people who saw me, I would line right up. Like, where are we going? What's a better game? Because my game, I'm playing it. I'm the queen of it. But it may not be that good. What have you got? Like, just someone that makes me feel really great. And I am so glad that you felt that. And I can relate to that, too. You know, just seeing people makes such a difference.
Yeah.
How does that communicate to how you work with your guys?
I try to see other people. I try to make sure that it's like, okay, you have an issue, you have a problem, or you just want to say something. My door is always open. My phone is always on. And I try to pay it forward and see other people.
You know, it is a gift we can give. And I feel so often that I am inept in most of my responsibilities. Like what, and let me put it this way. Like, have you ever felt the imposter syndrome?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. So like that's how I live my life most days. And being older helps, because I've started to become comfortable with not having to be, you know, skilled at everything or have all the answers. And one of the things that I can't look at, we're getting tissues out.
I brought tissues.
one of the things that I can do is recognize and energize, you know, and I am so glad that it landed with you that way, you know, at least be seen.
Yeah.
You know, that everybody's doing their best. Everybody's trying during the course of the day.
Especially at the wet show. That's so
how funny. How did that hit you? We just got back from the wet show. This is a big trade show. And you know, whether or not you're in the drain and sewer industry, in any industry, there's going to be the big show. And they are similar in many ways.
Yes.
How does it strike you to be at that show?
It's a blessing and a curse. So I love going there because mm-hmm. it's always good energy, nice people, and, you know, learning about what's new, what can help the guys, seeing all the new trucks, connecting with your vendors. That's always the fun part. But it's so lonely.
What, yeah. How many women
attendees this year?
Yeah. How many women are there? The Women in the Industry Roundtable had 20 people at it.
Yes.
Half of which were the panel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I saw 3 people of color. I might know there's more. There was more than that. But I did meet one woman from Trinidad, black woman with 350 employees. And I made sure I hung out with her.
Oh, my God. And I was trying to track her down.
Yeah. I mean, so how do we impact? It was even brought up. How do we impact that industry without making everybody wrong? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, what is it that you and I can do? Because I am feeling very much inadequate in bringing women to the industry. Like, we still in Zoom Drain don't have any women techs at this moment in time. Hopefully by the end of today, that'll be different. I mean, we interview, they come on board for a little bit. At this point right now, we don't have any technicians. We have a lot of women in you know, including owners in our businesses, but we don't have technicians. You know, how is it that I'm not better at that? Mm-hmm. What do you think will change? How do we add more diversity to this storied and lovely history of home services? Plumbing goes back 6,000 years. You know, there's mm-hmm. 10,000 years. People have been trying to move water from one place to the other.
You know, it's one of those multifaceted problems that you can start at one end and then realize maybe I should have started at the other end. They're just, it's an issue everywhere. And I think part of it is just because there's been such a focus on the school college pipeline that people lose sight of these are good, solid jobs and trades. Mm-hmm. And so how many vocational schools do you know of? I only know one or two in Chicago. They're all now focused on, you know, ACT, SAT testing and getting these kids into college, you know, not realizing that these are good jobs that need to be filled and not everybody's meant for college. So that's part of the problem.
And the self-esteem associated with it, like growing up, what I did, I went to prep school. It was all about college. If you were going to go to shop class and then trade tech, you were going to wear a patch, not a tie. It's mm-hmm. like showering at the end of the day versus at the beginning of the day. Mm-hmm. And there's that class distinction that creates self-esteem issues. Mm-hmm. You know, my mentor, Frank Blau, always said that like the problem in our industry is a self-esteem problem, is that these guys don't believe they're worth the prices that we need to charge for them. Mm-hmm. And that disconnect is why some of them leave. I'm not worth $300 an hour. How could you charge that much for what I do is maybe not spoken, but I see it sometimes, you know, that I see these guys and if you have even expressed it in some way that like, that's ripping people off because I'm really not worth that.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, so, and that's a tricky one to get to.
It is.
And we haven't started about, you know, that's the class distinction. Then there's the whole, you know, diversity and women in the industry. I keep thinking nurses, though, they touch grosser things and it's still connected with people. I mean, there's a weird thing there.
But that level of caregiving is always associated with women.
Because so it's more of a caregiving industry than ours is, even though, you know, what we do is so valuable. But yeah, it is a distinction that nurses are there to.
So it's really those paternalistic old school ideas of job assignments that really, I think, are also affecting diversity in our industry, mm-hmm. as well as systemic racism. You know, there's a history of keeping minorities and women out of trades because those are the jobs that men need to take care of their families. So we're still dealing with some that leftover thought process.
I can't tell you how often and recently I hear, well, he's going to need health insurance because he has the responsibility mm-hmm. of doing that, where we could hire a woman part-time and don't worry about benefits and those kinds of things. Like, wait a tick,
right.
That's really not where we live anymore, but
that's still
a deep-seated belief.
Yes.
Yeah. Family businesses. These are some challenging things. Well, one of the things I know that you do to be a change agent is you speak, and you recently had a speaking event. Will you tell us about that?
I am a one woman band, just trying to show students it's different, that you can still be successful and do something different. So over the weekend, I spoke at the Black in Business Networking Dinner at the University of Iowa's Tippy School of Business. I was a keynote speaker, and just, you know, tried to, by example, just by showing up, show that you can not follow the traditional path and still be successful. And to be a minority woman successful in a trade blew their minds.
I love, love, love. And you gave me your speech to read. It was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Do you have a personal mission statement, a company mission statement? Do you have some mantras that you have attached to?
Not really. I mean, there are things I say to myself that, you know, sometimes when you pull up to the office and you just cannot get out of the car.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, today's another day. You know, whatever happened yesterday was yesterday, and you'll start fresh again today.
Simon Sinek calls it a why. Like, a why are you doing this? Like, is there on those days, and the why is good for a day like that, where you think, what is the point?
Because I'm holding the door. So I'm not the only one. I do this, and I will try to show women and minorities that you can do it too.
You had a sentence in your speech that was so moving, that it can be lonely.
Only might be lonely, but somebody has to hold the door.
Only might be lonely, but somebody has to open the door is beautiful. So that gives you purpose and a why. And I have seen the way your team interacts with you. That is what we call culture, because we don't have any other word for it. But they love you. They love you. It's a really nice vibe.
Those are my other kids.
They are. And that, like, that sense of community and that sense of family, that really is the most important thing to me. And it is, I am super aware of this paradox that we need to create an engine where people can come and work with us for as long as they choose to stay, or it makes sense for both of us. And they probably are going to leave. And maybe they'll go on to something else even better. Like, maybe they'll start their own business, and wouldn't that make you proud?
Yeah.
If while they're here, we can impact their life in a positive way, if they can develop skills and get better, and we can keep this engine going, that very much drives me anymore. You know, not to just create a business with three people in it who hit the top of the ladder and there's just nowhere to go. Like, that's there's all shapes and sizes in this industry, and you get to do what you want to do. For me, it is really this expansion, the scalability that's going to provide careers, not just jobs, as our friend Ali
yes.
says. That makes a big impact. And I'm just, and the special sauce, I mean, there's the manuals, there's the systems, there's all that stuff, but the special sauce, that culture, is love. And that's what you have going with you and your team. They were leaning in when we were together. They were excited.
Oh, yeah.
They can't wait to get their hands on the tools and the trucks and the systems and help each other. It was pretty amazing. All right. Well, let's hear about a humbling moment. Was there a moment where you got laid low in this process that you thought, wait a tick, I got to regroup?
Yeah.
Just one.
I have to narrow it to life.
No, you know. Yeah, I mean, it happened. Life happens. But
well,
what came up for you?
You know, when we were going through this process of talking about how men and sewers and Zoom Drain could work together, blah, blah, blah. And I always put you off because I wanted to buy a plumbing company.
Yeah.
That one still hurts.
It could be a not yet, because the deal didn't go through.
No.
Yeah. And so,
but
how do you feel about it? You think, don't think so?
No. I just don't think that. Now, the actual seller,
uh-huh.
the owner of the company, nice guy, great guy. but a person close to him who was representing him in the sale didn't get it, didn't know why a woman would want to run a plumbing company, didn't understand why a minority woman would want to get into this business. And that was made clear on some of the calls. I mean, he called me little girl one more time. I'm like, come on. What is it, 1950?
Yeah.
So just in having to suck that up on every call, every interaction with him. So I believe that he caused the sale not to go through because he didn't think that his relative should sell it to
this third woman. Gravitating party.
Right.
Like third, a third party. Mm-hmm. I've heard that called a third party problem, you know, yep. Where you and he are getting along and then right. This is happening. Mm-hmm. This moon is circling and creating some gravitational right. force. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that can happen. There's a four letter word for that. Next.
Well, and you were next. So.
Yes. And I appreciate because you bought Men in Sewers. Mm-hmm. You are one who is comfortable in that arena. It excites me very much that your financial skills and your legal skills are going to come into play as you grow your empire, because I'm a big fan of using acquisition. All the big boys and girls do it. Yep. They use acquisition in any industry to grow companies. And I am not unfamiliar with it. And I applaud your efforts. So they don't all come together, but you're going to do it again.
Yes.
Yes. So that's exciting.
But that was my humbling moment to know that even though it's 2020, that those lingering stereotypes are out there and preventing you from realizing a dream.
If I were to ask Franco, how would he describe you? If I were to say, and Franco's one of her team members, how would he describe you? Or maybe one of the other guys.
I think
is it Lalo? Lalo. Mm-hmm. Lalo, who just bought a house. Bought a house. Like, how do you feel about that?
Ecstatic.
Is that
that's
the best?
Why we do this?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not only our financial freedom, but theirs.
Yeah.
That's what gets you going.
Very cool. So if you were to ask Lalo or Franco or like one of your guys to describe you, what are some words do you think that they would use?
So Lalo is the one that I refer to as my oldest.
Okay.
He's the one that
has he been with you
mom
the
on a job. No.
He doesn't call you mom. Oh, he does.
He does.
He's the one who did. He's your oldest child.
He's my oldest.
Okay, excellent.
He would say that, you know, again, that I see them. I listen to them. When they make suggestions, I take them to heart. And if I can do it, I do it. And really just tried to empower them to do their jobs, not just here's your tools, here's your assignment, but really empower them to do their jobs. I think they would say that. And that I'm nice and that I don't like it when they're hungry. So
you're always bringing food in.
There's food, there's donuts, there's whatever, you know.
The soccer mom has right. the cooler in the car. Very cool. All right. Well, I've got a couple of questions to wrap us up with.
Okay.
I think it's pronounced Proust. That's what Steve told me. Mm-hmm. I always said Proust, but it's a word I never said out loud.
Oh, yeah.
You know how that happens where you go, is that how it's pronounced? But the Proust questionnaire is from the Victorian days where it used to be a parlor game and they would ask questions to get, you know, to try and go a little deeper, maybe a little more behind the wall. So I'm going to ask you a couple of Proust questions. What would you consider the idea of happiness? What is your idea of happiness? What is happiness to you?
That's tough because it means different things at different times. On, you know, at the conclusion of a really hard work week, it could mean that, you know, Steve is home, we're watching Ancient Aliens and throwing popcorn at the TV because they're so ridiculous, you know? So that's our guilty pleasure. It could mean, like Lalo, you know, buying his house. You know, that makes me happy that, yeah, okay, I'm doing something right, that these guys are moving up the ladder. It could mean that my kids are happy.
Isn't that always a good day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and for really weird things, they're happy, you know? But it just, it varies.
It makes me think, you know, the one question I asked earlier about like a management moment, or, you know, I've had a lot of mentors, and I've also had some moments where I learned something that was useful. We use flag pages. Most mm-hmm. people are familiar with DISC, some kind of personality or motivational mapping, I think is the buzzword for it. Even as I asked that question, I thought, her answer is going to be based on who you are. You know, some people are more extroverted than introverted and more results focused than people focused. Would you consider yourself more of an introvert or an extrovert?
Oh, I'm an introvert.
You're an introvert. Yeah, that's where I would guess. And so it's a stretch for you to stand up and preach.
Right.
Sometimes in terms of your beliefs. So that, but that you're feeling compelled to do.
Yeah.
And then what, results oriented or people centric? We're all a mix of all of this, but if you had to tip the scale.
People-centric, mm-hmm. because if we don't make a milestone, you know, maybe we'll get it next quarter, but how's everybody feeling?
I feel that for sure when you walk in and you're taking the temperature of the people mm-hmm. around you, for sure. Okay, let's give you one more question. Give me a favorite hero. This is ridiculous. I'm asking it anyway. And this is how we're going to wrap up today. What is a hero? This is from Proust. What's a hero in fiction or in history? Is there someone that you have occasionally reminded yourself that persona is out there and you love them or respect that person, either fictional or real?
So fictional, I would have to go with Wonder Woman.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Wonder Woman.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a long time coming. Yes. Have you always loved her?
Yes.
Okay. Was it comic books or the TV show?
In my room playing with my fake lasso, trying to do some stunt I saw on the TV show, and ended up giving myself two black eyes the night before picture day in first grade.
With the whip? You whipped yourself?
But I, you know, never thought I couldn't do it because she did it.
There was another humbling moment.
Right. Well, I'm a little kid. I'm like, okay, two black eyes. Okay.
But next. Wonder Woman and just the wrists and the whole bit.
She did it all in heels. She did it all half dressed. You know, she.
What's not to love?
Right. So it's just empowering, giving all those paternalistic, stereotypical handcuffs. She still did it.
Still did it. Yeah, because even the comic book story is that she was in the 50s or no? She was way back when World War II. Okay, mm-hmm. that is the time where she was laying claim. Certainly not the average woman right. at the time. That's pretty cool. Excellent. Well, that seems like you are Wonder Woman. That seems like a good place for us to wrap today. How wonderful is this? Thanks for playing with me. I love, love, love you. And I'm so happy to have you on our inaugural episode of Behind the Walls podcast, PhD Bros. Yay. Thanks, Pamela.
Thank you.